Good morning. Welcome to Dig in the Dirt. This week, my guest is master gardener buddy and longtime friend, Betsy Ayers. Good morning.
Good morning, Anne.
Oh, wait.
Nice to be here with you this morning. Do we have our microphones? Are we ready to go?
We are ready to go. So, we have been doing this since 1997.
Isn't that wonderful?
That is amazing.
I think that one of the first things we should do this morning is have a little plug-in for Master Gardening and the Master Gardener program through the Extension Service.
Right now, people that aren't Master Gardeners can sign up to be in the class that starts in January. It's the winter term at Clatsop Community College. The class will be on Wednesdays at the college in Astoria, and it's the winter term, and it's a great program.
Well, it's a wonderful place to meet like-minded people who also mm-hmm. enjoy being in the garden, and I just am so grateful to the program, not only for teaching me so much about what I do know, so much more left to learn, of course, about gardening, but also to have made such a nice friendship with you, Anne, mm-hmm. Thanks to being in the class together and just enjoying the same things.
You know, I mean, I'm thinking of all the people that were in that class. We're all friends.
That's true.
I'm just thinking, like, Larkin was in that class.
Mm-hmm. The Brims were in the class.
Really?
Yeah, don't you remember? Linda and Mike were in there, in our same class that we were in.
Oh.
And Becky Hart was in that class.
Yeah, and Lynette Thiel Smith was in that class.
Right. And a woman named Nancy, who I used to see at my water aerobics class, and I don't know her last name. Well, and some other people we've forgotten, apparently. But anyway, it's wonderful to be here with you today.
Yeah. It's been a great journey. So, and that's when we started this program.
That's right, yes, because part of the Master Gardening class is you do community payback activities or events, as because the program costs a little bit of money, but nothing compared to the amount of learning and the materials that you're getting. So it's really set up to be a community payback, so people who go through the program design something that makes it possible to share their knowledge with other people in the community.
Right.
And a lot of wonderful things have come out of that for this county, and I don't know how long the Master Gardener program has been in Clatsop County, but it's been at least, well, it's been around a long time before I got a chance to take the class.
Well, I took one of the very first classes in, I think it was in 1984, or maybe it was in 83, so, and that's about when it started, and one of our main teachers was Ray McNeilan, who was the extension agent in Multnomah County, who started the Master Gardener program.
Yes, and if you're looking for a last-minute gift for that gardener that is on your list of people that you're like, oh, no, if you can find it locally, hopefully you can at your independent bookstore, the McNeilans put out a fantastic reference book that's called The Book of Lists, and it's got everything you ever wanted to know about what to plant in the shade, what to plant in the sun, what grows in as an espalier. Really, I just couldn't even begin to tell you how many wonderful things are in that book.
I love the Book of Lists. Right. If you have a shady place that's dry, or you have a
and you
sunny
want a plant that's
wet.
No taller than 3 feet, or right. you need, yeah, no, it just goes on and on and on. Very mm-hmm. easy to use, comprehensive, mm-hmm. and really invaluable resource.
Right. Or if you want that has winter interest, or that has pink flowers.
Yeah,
get all the list of all the things that would grow well. And then they have it keyed for where they grow well. Like, will they grow in this climate? Or do they grow in Bend? So it's great.
Yes, but it is an Oregon book, so you don't have to think about, you know, is it going to grow in Savannah? We're not worried about Savannah.
Right.
We're just worried about Oregon or doing research for Oregon. So, Anne, I wanted to wish you a happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. Yeah, today's the last day. We couldn't even find any Hanukkah music here.
Well, we know it's here somewhere, but for those of you who've never been at KMUN, next time you're coming down the hill, be sure to pop in and take a look at all the incredible reference library of music that is here, LPs and all kinds of CDs, and you would need to have an orientation session, I think, to be able to quickly come in and find what it was you were looking for, but I know it's all here. probably even the Hanukkah music.
Right. It's just that we couldn't find it.
Yeah. So as we're working up toward getting close to Christmas time, and this being the darkest time of the year, I was kind of looking around and thinking about, oh, some of the symbolism that comes with this time of the year and the pagan rituals that have been enfolded into the different religions. And having been raised an Episcopalian, really the Christian religion is the one that I'm the most familiar with. And so I was thinking about Christmas trees and how these have been so important to people for so long, and the symbolism of the tree of knowledge and the tree of life being, you know, just representative of everything that comes from up in the ground and grows up and needs light to grow and brings things from up under the ground, and how in the dark time of the year, bringing something that doesn't turn brown and look like it is dying, even though there is, of course, rebirth in the spring, in the plant kingdom for sure. The Norse people, way back when people were bringing trees into their homes as a way to protect against evil spirits and witches and to just have this sign of hope. And you know what I was thinking about is how you can make tea out of needles from evergreens and get vitamin C. And I've never really read much about ancient people doing that, but I bet they were, because scurvy would be a real problem when you're living without refrigeration and electricity and all the things that we are so lucky to have.
Well, also, if the ground is covered with snow and you can't get fresh anything.
Well, that's right. I guess it's been a long time since we've had a white Christmas here, so I kind of forget that there are other places where people are.
But in the Norse country.
Yes, right. It does. Well, I assume it still snows there. Well, things are changing. Anyway, to honor the solstice, they were bringing the trees in and decorating them and to really commemorate the idea and remember that even in the deepest of winter, there's life stirring underneath the soil, which reminds me, I have seen some bulbs poking out of the earth already. Yes, the beginnings of the, not so much the crocus, but you know, the daffodils start pretty early.
Oh, cool.
Yay.
That is good, because I haven't seen.
Oh,
thank you.
And it wasn't really until the 19th century. Oh, Carol Newman, our person who knows where things are, has just come in with some wonderful Hanukkah music, or at least she knew where they were. We knew it was here somewhere. But it wasn't until the 19th century that Christianity adapted the Christmas tree, but the early Christians had always thought of the tree as the tree of life. So what have you got there, Anne? Anything that looks like it'd be kind of fun to play during the break? Or?
Well, I'm working on it.
Okay, you look at that, and I'm going to talk a little bit about poinsettias, which have become really a standard Christmas item.
They're everywhere.
They are everywhere, and I don't necessarily remember them from my childhood, but maybe, I'm sure they were around, but I thought that the Christmas poinsettia legend was kind of fun. You know, the legend basically is that a peasant girl in Mexico didn't have any money, and she had a problem on Holy Night. She was supposed to bring a gift to contribute to the Christ Child ceremony that was happening at the church, and all the other children would be bringing something, and she didn't know what to do. And she decided that really what mattered was it was kind of the thought that counts. So she picked some weeds by the side of the road, and when she gets to the church, the weeds had transformed themselves into red poinsettias. And so she had this beautiful gift to put at the creche. So it has really, for us, become an enduring Christmas tradition. Of course, as everybody knows, you can get them in many other colors now. Well, not many other. I've never seen a blue one, for instance. But the white ones are nice in this gray time of the year that we're all putting up with right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that we're able to have a Mexican plant, you know, and they don't do well. I mean, some people are able to keep them all year and do it next year, but most people fail. And I've never been able to keep one alive through a year.
Well, I've tried, and really, I think if you're a professional nursery person, you know how to really feed and push that plant to put out those red leaves, and I would not know how to do that.
Okay, well, I have in the December Cultivator, our Clatsop County Master Gardener newsletter, in the December Hints in the Garden, it says, protect poinsettias from cold, place in the sunlight, but don't let the leaves touch the windows too cold, and fertilize with houseplant fertilizer to maintain leaf color.
Oh.
So maybe that's something we're doing wrong.
Not fertilizing it.
Right. And I would, you probably need, in the house it's so dry, they probably dry out pretty quickly.
Well, and you have to think these are plants that came from Mexico, and I was reading that in climates, for instance, if you lived in, say, Duluth, and you went to the grocery store and bought a poinsettia, you could actually ruin it by the time you left the grocery store and got to your car because it's, you know, 15 degrees or less outside and the wind is blowing. And
well, you know, the opposite can happen. My brother brought us a bunch of orchids. And this was in Northern California. And we put them in the car. It was 100 degrees. And after 30 minutes, when we went to the car, they were all dead.
Oh.
So, you know, you can freeze a tender plant and you can cook it.
Yes, no kidding. And I think, I imagine in Mexico that poinsettias probably get huge. I remember seeing Norfolk pines in Central America, and I'd never only seen them as something someone had on their tabletop, and, you know, when they were the size of, you know, rooftops. And I'm like, I was so impressed. You know, those in coleus, huge things growing outside. I'm like, wow. Of course, that's where they came from. They're not little scrawny houseplants. They're vigorous, outdoor, healthy plants.
That's fun. Or like aloes, huge, humongous aloe plants.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's exciting. Well, I'm thinking of one of the things, another thing that a person can do now is this is a time to check what your pH of your garden is. And, you know, you don't have to do, to get a pH, you don't have to get a, you don't have to send a sample in. You can buy, you know, garden centers have pH kits, and they're very easy. You put some soil and some water, you decant out the, you know, you let it sit for whatever, 15 or 20 minutes, you pour it out into the little vial, you add whatever the little thing is that's a reagent, stir, you get a color, it says your pH is X. Depending on your pH, maybe you need to add some wood ashes, maybe you need to add more compost, whatever. And it has in the directions with the kit, it says, you know, if this, add that, if this, add that. And so you can do that. And, you know, and there are lots of other things you can test as well. I'm not sure if those would be great. Like, you probably don't need to add any nitrogen now.
No, I think the rains would probably wash it right away.
Right. And, you know, I started late again. I'm my winter garden. And I have all these little teeny, they're about 3 or 4 inch spinach, bok choy, kale chard, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they're getting pounded. And I put them in the bed that was empty, and it's not the one that has the
cloche on it.
Yeah, and it doesn't have the frame for that. What I need to do is I need to actually pick them up and move them to one of the beds with that and put the plastic on and protect them, and they'll get warmer and they'll grow. I do have some really great celery. It's very bitter, but it's heat it up in a stir fry or put it in a soup and it's perfectly good. I mean, I've never grown great. I mean, I have big heads of celery.
Wow.
They are, first time ever. They are beautiful. And so they're sitting out there. I have the biggest parsley plant I've ever seen. It's about 4 or 5 feet wide.
I had some parsley that went to seed one year, and I let it grow in one of my raised beds, and I had more parsley than you could possibly imagine, and I made parsley pesto and made a lot of it, and I put it into ice cube trays, slowly froze it, and then just decanted it into plastic bags. And I'll tell you what, that was a most wonderful thing to have on hand for everything from soups to spaghetti sauces to anything that you wanted to add some beautiful greens to. It's not as juicy as basil, so I added quite a bit of water, because if you added that much olive oil, you would you'd have to invest in the olive oil company. And, you know, you can always add whatever you want in there. A lot of garlic oil, put some nuts in. Well, nuts don't freeze very well. But anyway, you get the idea. Mm-hmm. So that's one something you could think about doing with your parsley before it decides to put out a huge seed head and go crazy.
That is true. Well, I have parsley all over my garden from a plant that I bought from Teresa Retzloff years ago that has just been the best parsley. So I have parsley in a lot of places, which is great because I can keep it however I want it. And I always have parsley if I need fresh, and I use it a lot. So I might do something with that.
Yes, and for people that really...
My freezer is full. I did a lot of... my green beans were insane. I have a bunch of those in the freezer. I have salmon in the freezer. I mean, we did, you know, I have clams in the freezer.
Wonderful.
We are bountiful with food and canned stuff.
Yeah, this is a wonderful area for people that can do a little fishing and do a little gardening and some clam digging. It's just amazing what you can have in your freezer and keep on your shelves and those hints of summer gardens that can get defrosted, and oh, they're just so wonderful. It's a wonderful place to live, isn't it?
It is.
Even though we don't have snow at Christmas very often.
I'm okay with that. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt, and I'm with Betsy Ayers, and we'll be right back. Listening to Debbie Friedman, it's not by power, or not by might, not by power, and that's our quasi-Hanukkah celebration. I love that song. So
let's talk about other things that people can do this time of the year in the garden besides sort of looking at seed catalogs and reading their gift gardening books and making plans for the weather getting nicer and the days getting longer, which has already started.
That it has started. Some of the things that are in the hints for this month are things like protecting your landscape. So we'll probably get more wind and...
You think?
Yeah, and we'll probably get some freezing rain. And we'll probably have some snow this year. If you have plants that are whippy, either, you know, prune them or cover them or somehow stake them so that they're not flying around. I've got this insane bamboo at the front porch that has just gotten such Godzilla big, and it hits the house, and I need to figure out, it was very successful. It was a small clump when we bought it, and it's supposed to be a slow-growing clump, and it finally at some point at like year 8 after we planted it, it finally went putting out 25 shoots a year. And I probably need to cut it back or divide it or something. Anyway, that's something, and it whips all over and it smacks the house, and I need to protect that. And so if you have something like that going on, secure it somehow.
Wouldn't be very restful, I wouldn't think, having it banging into your house during a windstorm.
It's not. It's noisy.
A friend of mine who used to live in Eureka, California, who's a wonderful gardener, was always giving me plants when I would drive through on my way to the Bay Area to visit with relatives. And she'd say, no, I know this will work just fine on the Oregon coast. Well, some of it did and some of it didn't. But because it does get a little bit colder here than Eureka. But one of the things she gave me is a tree dahlia, which I have talked about on this show before, and it's just this wonderful plant. But it's growing up against a fence, and I tend to have to get bungee cords in the fall and sort of bungee it up against the fence because it grows, it's tall. It's like 15 feet tall. It's mostly just a specimen plant, but at the very top, usually late around here, sometimes as late as December, the little tiny flowers at the top arrive. They look much different in, say, Santa Cruz, California, than they do in Cannon Beach, Oregon. But it's a wonderful plant. I'm really fond of it. And I think I'm going to order a white one through a nursery that I found online that has some very unusual plants, also based in California. I guess I just, you know, in my heart of hearts, wish I could garden like that here. And
so we try.
And so we try, and we never quite give up. But yes, that's an instance of trying to tie down some landscaping plants. And mm-hmm. I have some abutilons, too, that really, really get beat up. And probably cutting those back would be a good idea. But you know what? They are still blooming. A lot of things are still blooming.
And that is true. I saw some photographs of some incredibly beautiful blue and purple hydrangeas yesterday.
We must have the same Facebook friend.
We must, yes.
And the beautiful poppy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that must have been, was that in Cannon Beach, that
I think it
that?
Was.
Yeah, I think
blooming. And now I don't have any of those, but I have a beautiful pink camellia blooming right now. I don't think I have much of anything else.
Well, some azaleas are blooming right now.
Oh, right. And there's a purple rhody down the street that's blooming. Those family are not supposed to be blooming right now.
Well, I don't know. Those rhododendrons are pretty amazing. You know, if you can get in with a good rhododendron person and figure it out, I think it's you could probably have them blooming
twice a year.
Well, not all through the calendar, but a good part of the calendar, because of course they're winter ones and early ones and midsummer ones.
Oh, not on the same plant.
No, not on the same plant. No, this is when you get tired of doing a lot of yard work and decide that it's time to just start putting in. Mm-hmm. Shrubs that will just sort of take care of themselves around here.
Mm-hmm.
And
so I think we should talk about if the forecast is for freezing, that's going to stay freezing, like we're going to have a week like we had last year, December or January?
It was December.
So if you have a plant that's on the edge of hardiness, or you're worried about, or it's new, a blanket, burlap, newspaper, something, cover it up and maybe take some twine or something and, you know, keep it so it doesn't blow off to protect it. And it's amazing. Just like a blanket keeps us warm, it keeps your plants warm and it will save it. If you can move things under eaves, onto a porch, in the garage that are movable, that's great.
Yes, I did make a mistake last year. I think it had been a few years since we had a freeze. It got in the 20s last year, and I think it stayed for 4 or 5 days. And I had, in my lazy gardener way, not taken the time to dig up my tuberous begonias out of their various pots and hanging things. And I stowed them all piled up together against the wall of the woodshed and called it good. Well, they all turned to slime, and I had to replace all of my tubers this year, which I was not very happy with myself about. But
well, we moved a bunch of pots at that time into the sunroom, which was unheated, and everything in there died.
Oh.
Yes. My angel trumpets all died, all except for one of my cymbidium orchids died.
Oh, dear.
Both of the lemon trees suffered severely. They are now loaded with lemons. They didn't die all the way, but you know, they didn't get ripe this year. And so now they're in the greenhouse. Although I don't think we've turned the heat on in there, but it's warmer there than in the sunroom.
Speaking of warmer, I'll tell you what, I don't know if it's going to be pouring rain on Christmas Day itself, but this is such a warm December that we're having, which makes me think about wonderful Christmas hikes. If you love to be outside, which most people who live around here do love to be outside, mm-hmm. it seems to me, now is a perfect time to take that hike on mm-hmm. Christmas Day. One of my favorites is to walk out Cape Falcon. If you go down to Oswald West Street Park and just go out there, it's just in the seas. We're having king tides right now. Are you familiar with king tides?
Well, they're like 10.
They're huge, mm-hmm. and it's just a beautiful time of the year to get out and take advantage of the amazing walking trails that we have mm-hmm. here.
One of my favorites is at Cape Disappointment, hiking over there. But there are trails. Fort Stevens has great trails. I mean, there are trails everywhere. Great hikes. Tillamook Head
is nice, although I think I love walking across Tillamook Head, but for some reason, and I'm not sure if it's just because more people know about it now and there are more people living in Oregon or there are more people enjoying being outdoors, but it is pretty much muddy all year round now. So if you don't mind getting muddy...
Well, there's another thing with the muddy. People fall, and there are every year there are multiple people that have to be rescued that are seriously hurt on Tillamook Head. So if you do it, dress properly, be ready for it.
I think that the people that they have to get off of Tillamook Head are not on the trail. I think they've decided it would be fun to try to go down that cliff to get to that beach down there.
Oh.
Or they're getting a little too close to the edge. Well, then there was that woman who pushed her boyfriend off, but that was a few years ago.
There was that. Yes, there was that. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking that we should mention rodents. Rodents are on the move right now.
Oh, yes.
We have one in the walls downstairs, which we're going to have to trap. And we've trapped a bunch earlier in the year. You might have rodents hanging in the mulch around your trees. And it's one of the reasons that you don't want to mound up the mulch around the main stem of the tree. So take it away from there so that I guess they could scratch and damage the bark of the tree.
Yeah, they will gnaw on bark. And speaking of gnawing on things, last week I spent a significant amount of money having the wiring on my car, the electronics, repaired. And it turns out that someone with four legs and a long, disgusting tail had made a home inside my car and ate the wiring. Quite expensive to have fixed. It's a newer car with electronics, and I went online. Isn't the internet wonderful, where you can find out everything, whether it's true or not? And it said that in an attempt to become more environmentally conscious, that car manufacturers now are using soy and corn byproducts in the manufacture of the wires that go into cars. Well, if that's true, that's nuts, because everybody around here has had rodents living in their car, usually just to get warm. You know, you'll go to the oil change place or someone's husband will change the oil and here's this nest in there. But this is was serious damage to my car. Very upsetting. And if that's true, then I don't know what I'm going to do, really. Just hope that the cayenne pepper that I sprinkled around in there would be a deterrent. But I've read that people are like, oh, no, they love that stuff. So I
wow. Yeah. I'm thinking if there's some kind of a barrier you can put up, like under the car, like where they can't get up. Because, I mean, that's what we do in the house. You want to seal up all the holes.
Well, when you think about how a car works, I'm not a mechanic, but I think if you were to lie down on the ground and look underneath a car, there are myriad ways that an animal can get in there, and they like to chew up the insulation. And the whole thing is just really... if anybody would like to call the radio station with a good suggestion on how to eliminate this problem, I would really like to hear from them after the show is over, which will be, oh dear, any minute now. And I haven't even gotten to the mistletoe, but I do want to talk about Christmas wheat, which a friend of mine whose family of origin is from Eastern Europe told me that on the feast of Santa Lucia, or Saint Lucy, that families would plant a little bit of wheat in something that they would keep in the house and water, and then it would sprout by Christmas Day, and then the children would carry it to the creche as a gift to the baby Jesus. And it's symbolic of the Eucharist bread that feeds the soul, as well as the bread that's the staff of life. Gluten phobes beware.
Well, you know, what's nice is if you take a living, seed and you sprout it this time of year, you get green.
I know, isn't it fun?
That is a great idea. I mean, it could be anything.
Well, it really could be, but, something that you could snip off and put on top of your soup. What the heck?
Right, yeah. Or even just having the center of the table. I think it's a great idea. I cannot believe the time is gone. Well, thank you very much for coming, Betsy. This has been fun. I hope you got some tips for what to do. Look around in your yard. Just because it's crummy doesn't mean you have to give up on the garden. There's stuff to do. If you have messes out there, clean it up. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine. Talk to you in a week. Have a great one.